Where warp meets weft.
Where warp meets weft.
This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to Weavecast, episode 47, Mary Louise Van Dyke. This episode, ensemble member Nancy Smith Kilkenny brings us a wonderful story of Mary Louise Van Dyke and the paramount she wove for the Christ Episcopal Church in Oberlin, Ohio. We also hear from Allison Ricker, the sacristan charged with conserving and preserving those paramounts. When I first got the audio for this episode, I hesitated because I know that religion is a hot-button topic for a lot of people, and I didn't want to offend anybody. But then I thought about it, and there are two ways to handle and be respectful of diversity, whether it's ethnic or religious or sexual orientation. And one of those ways is to avoid the subject, to pretend that we're all the same and just not talk about the ways in which we're different. And the other way is to celebrate those differences, to talk about them, explore them, and learn from each other. So in the same spirit that I would gleefully and enthusiastically produce a show about an Indian weaver talking about how Hinduism has inspired his cloth, or I would speak to a Tibetan weaver about the influences of Buddhism on their designs, or an atheist talking about how an incredibly elegant molecular biological system influenced their design, I proudly present Mary Louise Van Dyke talking about how her Christian faith influenced her weaving and design process. If you listen closely, you'll hear Mary Louise talk about her designs in a way that speaks to all faiths. If the goal of art is to touch the divine, I believe she has.
I'm sitting in Christ Episcopal Church in Oberlin, Ohio, a lovely brick structure that's about 150 years old. Clearly a landmark in this college town that boasts a very rich history. It's particularly rich in history regarding the citizen involvement of in helping slaves escape by way of the Underground Railroad. So Oberlin's a famous town. Christ Episcopal is fortunate enough to have as one of its members Mary Louise Van Dyke, a talented longtime hand weaver whose work graces its sanctuary. We are here in the sacristy talking to Mary Louise this afternoon, and we're going to talk to her about her hand weaving. And Mary Louise, maybe you can start off by talking to us about how you got into weaving in the first place. What's your history with hand weaving?
I like texture and color. I did a lot of artwork, taught music and art, actually, and found that working with the threads, the various textures, there's something tactile about it that I just find that very satisfying.
How long have you been weaving?
Oh, probably 60 years.
Really?
Yeah, close to 60.
And how did you get into hand weaving? It's clear that you like art.
Yes.
But what about the expression in terms of weaving and textiles? When did you start to learn how to do that?
Well, I this is a long story. I'll make it short. I was in Chicago. Went to the Chicago Art Museum. I had 2 weeks in Chicago and asked them, what could I do at the art museum in 2 weeks? And they said, well, just go down and look in all of the classrooms. There are classes going on. So I poked in all of them. And when I saw Elsie Regensteiner's class, that was fantastic. And I knew it was weaving for me. She was a wonderful teacher. But unfortunately, the class was too long, so that I could not take her class, but I found another one, and that's how it all started.
Now, what about ecclesiastical and liturgical weaving? What drew you to that? Because that's what we're talking about today, your work here at the church. There had to be something that kind of drew you into that.
Well, we have, as you know, we have a lovely sanctuary, and we have stained glass windows. And each Sunday, I sit there looking around and enjoying the color coming in the windows, and was totally inspired. And I thought, you know, I think that I could weave something to match those windows. So that's really the way I got started.
Talk to me about the symbols in your pieces. I'm looking at some of the vestments that you've woven, the altar cloths, and those kinds of things, and they're all filled with symbolism. Talk to me about where you got that and why that's important.
Oh, I'd love to. There are two frontals. The first frontal I wove was the fountain of life, or the river of life, actually, and a tree of life growing out of that water. And I went for my really design, the shaker tree of life, and used that as sort of a model and adapted it to the frontal. So I used the water flowing along the bottom, put in some little sparklies for water. I used the double helix, the DNA, for the tree trunk coming out of the water for the life. And then the leaves in the shaker were not tripartite. And I thought it would be a very good thing, this is a liturgical piece, to have a three. And so I designed special leaves, which are in three parts, which can be manipulated and moved around to make the tree, the foliage. So everything there comes out of symbolism. And then also this tripartite leaf I could manipulate to make a wreath, so that that also the unending circle. So those were and that was the tree of life. Now, the fruit, I have to tell you about the fruit, because I spent literally months shopping for the right thing for the fruit. I knew what I wanted. The fruits all had to be alike, but different. And they had to have texture. I went everywhere, in Cleveland and all the shops around, and wouldn't you know, one day I walked into the knitting shop right here in Oberlin, and there was this lovely ribbon that someone had crocheted, I think, into a scarf. And I said, that's it. And it worked out beautifully. It was multicolored, a very thin, silky ribbon. And so that each fruit is alike, but each fruit is different. We have a blind member in the congregation, a wonderful woman. And I kept thinking of her the whole time I was weaving that, thinking, Barbara, I want you to come up and touch this. I want you to really enjoy this frontal. So I had her in mind, and people like her who need to touch something. I'm a hymnologist, so it would be perfectly logical that I would weave a hymn, and that is what I did with the Advent frontal. I took O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. That is based on the seven antiphons, which are sung before the Magnificat through the end of Advent. And I used those as the basis for my symbols. So the key of David, I have a key. For the wisdom, I have the lamp of learning. For the day spring, I have the rising sun. So it's full of symbols. Then in the middle, I thought, wouldn't it be neat? And I guess maybe Father Brian said, it'd be nice if we could have a tree in both of them. So I took the root of Jesse, Radix Jesse, and made the root of Jesse the centerpiece of that one.
Looks like most of your work has been done in the Theomormon technique.
All of these, both of these pieces were.
Okay. Talk to us about Theomormon and why that's the technique that really needed to be used for an effective design.
Well, Theomormon was a British weaver, and I'm sure everyone, weavers, will recognize that name. And she used an old technique, but she used it and exploited it so that it became known as Theomormon technique. It's a wonderful way of weaving two levels at once. You weave the bottom, the web, and then at the same time you build up your pattern. So you've got a pattern going, and that's why, to me, it's important that everything is very meticulously charted out so that I know exactly where I am and what patterns are going in.
Now, with the Theomormon technique, you weave this base cloth, if you will.
Right.
Is that always plain weave, or do you ever use a twill? What do you use?
No, I use a plain weave. Always. I use a tabby as the background.
Now, when you design, I saw that you had this very meticulously charted out design, which was very interesting. How long does it take you to put that together, and how do you use it as you're weaving?
Well, I enjoy it. I think some people wouldn't, but I enjoy the designing. And I spend hours with the paper, graph paper, coloring and first, let's take the Root of Jesse. I drew it freehand. Then I charted it so that you don't want to just go at it making piece by piece. You want the thing to flow, but then you adapt it on the graph paper.
So that as you're going along, you can see exactly where you are, which with each throw of the weft,
right.
You also know what you have to do with the design that's laying on top.
On that shot, right.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you're a hymnologist. I know you're very involved in the Hymn Society here. How does your understanding of theology give you an approach to your weaving? Do you feel that to be an effective weaver of liturgical symbols, you really have to understand the history and the theology behind it? I find that there's a lot of great theology in those hymns.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's one approach. I really feel very strongly that I want people to approach this work on three levels. First, they're going to see it. So it should be pleasing to the eye. It should have form, it should have balance, it should be a pleasing thing to look at as a work of art. Then next, I like to engage people through their mind, and that's where the symbols come, because we have such a rich history of symbolism, and a lot of, I think it would be church history, really. I mean, it's all there. And as people look at it, this begins to take a depth, they go one depth lower. And then I want them to have a spiritual experience. I want them to realize, yes, they've just touched something that's very infinite. This is infinite. This is the source. And all works of art have that feeling of somewhere, it's a fleeting moment, but it's also an experience of infinity.
And when you're designing the piece, I would imagine that you need to think about how people see it and from where. You know, you have to have a really good understanding of your sanctuary.
Yes, that was fun. I had that when I designed it, of course, imagining that I would be coming in the door. And that's why I want them to see something that attracts them as a work of art first. And if it doesn't go any more than that, that's all right. It's okay. They've encountered it. But I want them, as they come closer, to encounter it then, see the symbols, and then have this experience of something greater. But it was fun because when the big day came when I finally came down and put it on the altar. But I brought about two or three members of my guild and asked them, what do you think here? Stand back there. And it was really fun for us all to tweak it a little bit.
Now, were your pieces commissioned by your church, or did you just think, I need to do this, I'm going to go to the priest, I'm going to talk to him about this? How did you do that?
Well, that's an interesting question. As I said, I sat in church and thought, I would like to do something that matches these windows. And that's the beauty of, I just told you about the multicolored fruit, because that matches the windows. So the first time I just sort of said, I'm ready to do something big and I would like to do a frontal. for the altar. And Allison, the sacristan, right away said, oh, wonderful, we need a green one. That's the long season, of course. That's the one that hangs there the longest. And we need a green one. I said, fine. What do you want? She said, River of Life, just like that. Tree of Life, just like that. So that's the way that started. Then Father Brian wanted an Advent frontal because we now can use blue. And he wanted a blue frontal. And I said, fine, I'd be glad to. And then I, of course, because I'm a hymnologist, said, what about using all of the different metaphors for the rising sun, the key of David? And I will put those in. So that I was commissioned to do that one.
Tell me about your weaving studio now. About a year ago, I was lucky enough to come in and see the weaving studio that you have at your retirement community, and you share that space with a lot of other people who have different crafts. Is that where you did these big pieces, or was that done in another place?
No, that was done there. And that was neat, because people always came in and looked over my shoulder, you know, what are you doing? And then I could explain. It was fun to have those.
How large of a loom did you do some of those frontal pieces on?
I had to use three panels. The loom is only, it's only really about 40 inches wide, if that. Now, these frontals are 72 inches wide. I figured I didn't want anything down the middle, so I used three panels instead. It worked out fine.
What kinds of projects are you working on these days? What are you finding your inspiration in?
Well, for 4 years, each of these frontals took 2 years. So for 4 years of slavishly following those grids, little bit by little bit, when I finally finished that, I just wanted to do something with abandon. So I've been doing just things that, you know, creative things with the loom, creating some sculptures, creating some mobiles, that sort of thing that... Again, I'll get back to the Mormon again, I know.
Allison Ricker is the sacristan at Christ Church. Among other things, it's her job to ensure that the altar pyramids are carefully stored and cared for.
Allison, what goes into the care of Mary Louise's textile pieces, and how do you make them last for many years to come?
Well, we actually haven't had them for many years, so I'm not sure how it will work in the long run, but we do take a lot of care to fold them up as we carry them into the very small room where they're kept. I have to walk behind the organ with them, so I fold them in on themselves so they don't catch. The weaving is fairly fragile. The decorations on the green the ribbons are very fragile, and I've snagged them a couple of times on the doorway. So now I'm very careful when I take them in and out of that very narrow space. And we cover them with a dust cover when they're hanging on the rods behind the organ. That room is kept at a fairly constant temperature. The humidity is low, and they're completely undisturbed when they're in there. It's a locked room, so very few people have access to it. And we take them to the dry cleaner, our hangings. But Mary Louise's are cotton, so they shouldn't need to be dry cleaned. We have not had to clean them. We did use a little bit of fray check on the green frontal because it had some spots where it was pulling out, and Mary Louise helped me do that when we put it away last time.
What about the pieces that the priest wears? Now, that might get more wear than, say, an altar piece that is just sitting there. Do you instruct the priest on how to handle those pieces, or do you never need to get those cleaned?
The priest is very conscientious about not usually not doing things in the chasubles that will be damaging, although he did change the toner on the photocopier once while wearing the white frontal. And we weren't really very happy about that because it did end up with toner all down the front of the frontal. The chasuble. So he's very careful now. We haven't had any major wine spills on the chasubles, which could happen. And since he does have on an alb underneath the frontal, there's not a lot, or the chasuble, there's not a lot of soiling around the neckline, which would be typical. And I'm assuming that we will simply use a cold water wash, a hand wash, when we need to do some spot cleaning.
Now, I remember that Mary Louise had an exhibition last year at the retirement community where she lives. How did you ensure that everything was handled properly then?
The curator of that show was very, very careful. And I came out with her when the pieces were hung. She made sure that they were hanging far enough away from the diners that people wouldn't be tempted to kind of lean up against them and touch them. And I think that the residents are all very responsible people who would not touch something that was up in an exhibit. So I didn't really have a lot of concern about having them hanging out in the open. And we do keep the chasubles in garment bags when they're not being used. And they're kept in that same room behind the organ where the frontals hang. So they are always kept in that kind of cool, climate-controlled area.
I've always found that sacred spaces are a peaceful respite from the daily hustle and bustle of modern living. But in the many churches I've been privileged to worship in, Christ Church has a humble majesty with the historic architecture, the intricate stained glass, and the handmade altar textiles so lovingly made by all of the artists, including liturgical hand weaver Mary Louise Van Dyke. For Weavecast, I'm Nancy Smith Kilkenny in Oberlin, Ohio.
Weavecast is brought to you, in part, through the generosity of our donating listeners. I want to thank everyone who contributed to the server food account in November. Thanks to your efforts, the server hosting fees are now funded through June 2010. If you want to pitch in a buck or two, you can find that link on the weavezine.com homepage in the right-hand column. I'm going to play you out with Carmen Tyler's rendition of O Come, O Come Emmanuel, the music that inspired Mary Louise's design of the Advent pyramids for her church.
O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel, that mourns in lonely exile here, until the Son of God appears. By thine advent here, disperse the gloomy clouds of night, and death's dark shadows put to flight. Sinai's height. In ancient times did give the law. In clouds of majesty and awe. Rejoice, rejoice. Israel, rejoice.
That was O Come, O Come Emmanuel, sung by Carmen Tyler. This same song provided our ambient music for this episode, the lovely harp stylings of Two Harps. Both of these artists generously made their music available on Mivio's Music Alley. If you are interested in learning more about their work, I will have links to their sites in the show notes, which you can find at weavezine.com/audio.